Hello, everyone. We are continuing on with John Flavel's The Mystery of Providence. And last time we were continuing in an overall part one, The Evidence of Providence. And the first chapter was The Work of Providence for the Saints. And we finished that chapter last time. He continued with answering questions about things that should obviously or evidently show God's providence in all of creation and how things work out in people's lives, and especially the saints. And that brought us up to chapter two, which, Lord willing, we're going to begin this time. And I'll go ahead and start now. It's called Our Birth and Upbringing. Mr. Flavel begins, having proved that the affairs of the saints in this world are certainly conducted by the wisdom and care of a special providence, my next work is to show you in what affairs and concerns of theirs the providence of God more especially appears, and what are the most remarkable performances of providence for them in this world. And here I am not led directly by my text to speak of the most internal and spiritual performances of providence immediately relating to the souls of his people, though they all relate to their souls mediately, or things in between, and eventually. So they are things that are in between. Immediately means without something in between. But of the more visible and external performances of providence for them. Now, just as a reminder, the text that he uses was in the introduction. It was Psalm 57, verse 2. I will cry unto God most high, unto God that performeth all things for me. Now, continuing with Mr. Flavel, it is not to be supposed that I should touch all these. They are more than the sands of the beaches. But what I aim at is to discourse to you on some more special and more observable performances of providence for you. To start with, let us consider how well providence has performed the first work that ever it did for us in our formation and protection in the womb. Certainly, this is a very glorious and admirable performance. It is that which the psalmist admires. My substance was not hid from thee when I was made in secret and curiously wrought in the lowest parts of the earth, Psalm 139, verse 15. The womb is so called for this reason, that as skillful artists, when they have some choice piece in hand, perfect it in private, and then bring it into the light for all to gaze at, so it was here. The two things are admirable in this performance of providence for us. First, the rare structure and excellent composition of the body. I am wonderfully made. That word, ruchamti, which is probably the Hebrew, is very full. The Vulgate, which I believe is the Latin Vulgate, renders it painted as with a needle, or in other words, richly embroidered with nerves and veins. Oh, how skillful workmanship that is in that one part, the eye. How is it forced some to acknowledge a God upon the examination of it, that God exists? Providence, when it went about this work, had its model or pattern before it, according to which it molded every part. In thy book all thy members were written, verse 16. Again, that's from Psalm 139. Have you an integral perfection and fullness of members? It is because he wrote them all in his book, or painted your body according to that exact model which he drew of you in his own glorious purpose before you had a being. Had an eye, an ear, a hand, a foot, been wanting or lacking in the plan, you had now been sadly aware of the defect. In other words, you would have not had a hand or an ear or an eye. This world had been but a dungeon to you without those windows, and you had lived, as many do, an object of pity to others, if you had been missing an eye or a hand. If you have low thoughts of this mercy, ask the blind, the deaf, the lame, and the dumb the value and worth of those mercies, and they will tell you. There is a world of cost bestowed upon your very body. You might have been cast into another mold and created a worm or a toad. I remember Luther tells us of two cardinals riding in great pomp to the Council of Constance. I guess these were Roman Catholic church cardinals. And by the way, they heard a man in the fields bitterly weeping and wailing. When they came to him, they found him intently viewing an ugly toad and asked him why he wept so bitterly. He told them his heart was melted with this consideration, that God had not made him such a loathsome and deformed creature. This is a quote. "This is what I love to weep at," he said. Whereupon one of them cries out, "Well said, Father." Again, the quote, "The unlearned will rise and take heaven, and we with all our learning shall be cast into hell," end quote. No part of the common lump was so figured and polished as man is. Galen gave Epicurus 100 years to imagine a more commodious situation, configuration, or composition of any one member of a human body. And if all the angels had studied to this day, they could not have cast the body of man into a better mold. And yet, all this is but the enameling of the case, or putting something on the outside, or polishing the casket in which the rare jewel lies. Providence has not only built the house, but brought the inhabitant, and I mean the soul, into the possession of it. A glorious piece it is, the soul, that bears the very image of God upon it, being all in all, and all in every part. How noble are its faculties and affections! How nimble, various, and infatigable are its motions! How comprehensive is its capacity! It is a companion for angels, nay, capable of espousal to Christ, an eternal communion with God. It is the wonder of earth and the envy of hell. Suppose now, and why should you not suppose what you so frequently behold in the world, that Providence had so permitted and ordered it that your soul had entered into your body with one or two of its faculties wounded and defective? Suppose its understanding had been cracked. What a miserable life you would have lived in this world, being capable of neither service nor comfort. And truly, when I have considered those works of Providence in bringing into the world, in all countries and ages, some such spectacles of pity, some deprived of the use of reason and differing from beasts in little more than shape and figure, and others, though sound in their understandings, yet deformed or defective in their bodies, monstrous, misshapen, and loathsome creatures, and monstrous is just using a figure of speech that we can understand, I can resolve the design of this providence into nothing else but a demonstration of his sovereign power, unless they are designed as foils to set off the beauty of other rare and exquisite pieces, and intended to stand before your eyes as monitors of God's mercy to you, that your hearts, as often as you behold them, might be melted into thankfulness for distinguishing favor to you. Not that God doesn't care for these individuals, but in his sovereign will, he has created these things in the way he has, and we are to make observance of the things of creation for the betterment of our souls, mostly in humility and thankfulness. Look then, but not proudly, upon your outside and inside. See and admire what Providence has done for you, and how well it has performed the first service that ever it did for you in this world. And yet this was not all it did for you. Before you saw this world, It preserved you, as well as formed you in the womb, else you had been as those embryos Job speaks of, which never saw the light, Job 3:16. Abortives go for nothing in the world, and there are multitudes of them. And I would assume abortives are when the woman would miscarry. Some never had a reasonable soul breathed into them, but only the rudiments and rough draft of a body. These come not into the account of men, but perish as the beast does. And now, I'm not sure I'm going to personally agree that it's hard to understand exactly what he's saying. If he's saying that unless you're born, you don't have a reasonable soul, I'm going to disagree with that, that statement, and believe that the a reasonable reasonable soul was breathed into the embryo at the moment of conception. I'm not sure exactly that's what he's saying, but if it is, then I would personally push back a little bit on that statement. Now, others die in or shortly after they come out of the womb, and though their life was but a moment, yet that moment entails an eternity upon them. Had this been your case, as it is the case of millions, then supposing your salvation, yet you had been utterly unserviceable to God in the world, none had been the better for you, nor you the better for any in the world. You had been utterly incapable of all that good which throughout your life you have either done to others or received from others. And if we consider the nature of that obscure life which we lived in the womb, how small an accident, had it been permitted by providence, could have extinguished our life like a bird in the shell. We cannot therefore but admire the tender care of providence over us, and say with the psalmist, "Thou hast covered me in my mother's womb," Psalm 139, verse 13. And not only so, but thou art he that took me out of the womb, Psalm 22, verse 9. He preserved you there to the fullness of time, and when that time was come, brought you safely through manifold hazards into that place in the world which he, from eternity, prepared for you. Another great performance of providence for the people of God respects the place and time of their birth. And truly, this is no small concern to every one of us, but of vast consequence, either to our good or evil, though it is little considered by most men. I am persuaded the thoughts of few Christians penetrate deep enough into this providence, but slide too slightly and superficially over an abyss of much mercy, rich and manifold mercy, wrapped up in this glorious performance of providence for them. Friends, can you think it an indifferent thing into what part of the world the womb of nature has cast you out? Does nothing depend upon what spot of the creation or in what age of the world your lot has fallen? And lot is not by chance, it is directed by the sovereign God of the universe. It may be you have not seriously thought about this matter. And because this point is so seldom touched, I will therefore dive a little more particularly and distinctly into it, and endeavor to warm your affections with a representation of the many and rich benefits you owe to this one performance of providence for you. We will consider it under a double respect or relation, as it respects your present comfort in this world, and as it relates to your eternal happiness in the world to come. This performance of providence for you very much concerns your present comfort in this world. All the rooms in this great house are not alike pleasant and commodious for the inhabitants of it. You read of the dark places of the earth, which are full of the habitations of cruelty, Psalm 74, verse 20, and many such dismal places are found in the habitable earth. What a vast tract of the world lies as a waste wilderness. Suppose your mothers had brought you forth in America among the savage Indians, and that's being born as one. And I think the following is what he means when he termed them savage. Who herd together as brute beasts, are scorched with heat and starved with cold, being naked, destitute, and defenseless, then how poor, miserable, and unprovided with earthly comfort and accommodations are many millions of the inhabitants of this world. What mercies do you enjoy in respect of the amenity, fertility, temperature, and civility of the place of your habitation? What is it but a garden enclosed out of a wilderness? I may without partiality or vanity say, God has, even upon temporal accounts, provided you with one of the healthiest, pleasantest, and in all respects, the best furnished room in all the great house of this world. Hear what your own chronicler says of it. Quote, it is the fortunate island, the paradise of pleasure, the garden of God, whose valleys are like Eden, whose hills are as Lebanon, whose springs are as Pisgah, whose rivers are as Jordan, whose wall is the ocean, and whose defense is the Lord Jehovah, end quote. I'm assuming he's talking about the place in which they lived at the time, where he lived, and the people to whom he's writing. You are here provided with necessary and comfortable accommodations for your bodies that a great part of the world are unacquainted with. It is not with the poorest among us, as it is said to be with the poor Russians, whose poverty pinches and bites with such sharp teeth that their poor cry at the doors, give me and cut me, give me and kill me. Do not say that the barbarous nations excel you in that they possess the mines of silver and gold, which it may be you think enough to make up for all other inconveniences of life. Alas, poor creatures, better had it been for them if their country had brought forth briars and thorns instead of gold and silver and precious stones. For this has been the occasion of ruining all their other comforts in this world. This has invited their cruel, avaricious enemies among them, under whose servitude they groan and die without mercy, and thousands of them have chosen death rather than life on the terms they enjoyed it. And why might not your lot have fallen there as well as where it is? Are not they made of the same clay and endowed with as good a nature as yourselves? Oh, what a distinction has divine mercy made where nature made none. Consider, ungrateful man, you might have fallen into some of those regions where a tainted air, A-I-R, frequently cloys the jaws of death, where the inhabitants differ very little from the beasts in the manner of their living. But God has provided for you and given the poorest among us far better accommodations of life than the greatest among them are ordinarily provided with. Oh, what providence has done for you! Now, that's not because of you or because you deserved it or earned it or anything. There's, as he kind of said, we're all made out of the same clay, and so there's no difference. But God, again, in his sovereign will, chose to give these things to you when it could have been much harder. And again, these should bring us to humility and thankfulness and a greater desire to serve God. Mr. Flavel continues, but all that I have said is very inconsiderable in comparison with the spiritual mercies and advantages you here enjoy for your souls. Oh, this is such an advantageous cast of providence for you as obliges you to a thankful acknowledgement of it to all eternity. For let us here make but a few suppositions in the case before us, and the glory of providence will shine like a sunbeam full in your faces. Suppose it had been your lot to have fallen in any of those vast continents possessed by pagans and heathens at this day, who bow down to the stalk of a tree and worship the host of heaven, like the sun, moon, or stars. This is the case of millions and millions of millions for pagan idolaters, as that searching scholar Brerewood informs us, do not only fill the circumference of 900 miles in Europe, but almost the one half of Africa, more than half of Asia, and almost the whole of America. Oh, how deplorable had your case been if a pagan idolatress had brought you forth and idolatry had been sucked in with your mother's milk. Then, in all probability, you had been at this day worshiping devils and racing at full speed in the direct road to damnation, for these are the people of God's wrath. Pour out thy fury upon the heathen that know thee not, and upon the families that call not upon thy name, Jeremiah 10, verse 25. How dreadful is that imprecation against them, which takes hold of them and all that is theirs. Confounded be all they that serve graven images, that boast themselves of idols, Psalm 97, verse 7. Or suppose your lot had fallen among the Mahometans, which would be Islam, who next to pagans spread over the greatest tract of the earth. For though Arabia bred that unclean bird, yet that cage could not long contain him. For not only the Arabians, but the Persians, Turks, and Tartars do all bow down their backs under that grand impostor. This poison has dispersed itself through the veins of Asia, over a great part of Africa, even the circumference of 7,000 miles, and does not stop there, but has tainted a considerable part of Europe also. Had your lot fallen here, oh, what unhappy men and women had you been, notwithstanding the natural amenity and pleasantness of your native soil. You had then adored a grand impostor and died in a fool's paradise. Instead of God's living oracles, you had been, as they now are, deceived to your eternal ruin with such fond, mad, and wild dreams as whoso considers would think the authors had more need of manacles and fetters than arguments or sober answers. Or, if neither of these had been your lot, suppose you had been emptied by the womb of nature into this little spot of the earth, which is Christianized by profession, but nevertheless, for the most part, overrun by popish idolatry and anti-Christian delusions. What unhappy men and women had you been had you sucked a popish breast? Obviously, metaphorically speaking. For his people are to be the subjects of the vials of God's wrath to be poured out successively upon them, Revelation 16. And the scriptures in round and plain language tell us what their fate must be. And for this cause, God shall send them strong delusion, that they should believe a lie, that they all might be damned, who believed not the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness, 2 Thessalonians 2, verses 11 and 12. Now, briefly back to Revelation, that probably indicates that Mr. Flavel believed in the historicist method of interpreting Revelation, where all of Revelation has unfolded over the church age. And again, the widely held belief with the Protestants and the Reformers that the Roman Catholic Church is the Antichrist. Now, Mr. Flavel continues, "Nay, you might have fallen into the same land in which your habitation now is, and yet have had no advantage by it as to salvation, if he, God, that chose the bounds of your habitation, had not also graciously determined the times for you," Acts 17:26. "Suppose your lot had fallen where it is during the pagan state of England, where for many hundreds of years were gross and vile idolaters. Thick darkness overspread the people of this island, and, as in other countries, the devil was worshipped and his lying oracles zealously believed. The shaking of the top of Jupiter's oak in Dodona, the cauldron smitten with the rod in the hand of Jupiter's image, the laurel and fountain of Daphne, these were the ordinances on which the poor, deluded wretches waited. So in this nation they worshipped idols also. The sun and moon were adored for gods, together with many abominable idols which our ancestors worshipped, and whose memorials are not to this day quite obliterated among us. Or suppose our lot had fallen in those later miserable days in which Queen Mary sent so many hundreds to heaven in a fiery chariot, when the poor Protestants skulked up and down in holes and woods to preserve themselves from popish inquisitors who, like bloodhounds, hunted up and down through all the cities, towns, and villages of the nation to seek out the poor sheep of Christ for a prey, P-R-E-Y. But such has been the special care of Providence towards us that our turn to be brought upon the stage of this world was graciously reserved for better days, so that if we had had our own option, we could not have chosen for ourselves as Providence has done. We are not only furnished with the best room in this great house, but before we were put into it, it was swept with the broom of national reformation from idolatry, yea, and washed by the blood of martyrs from popish filthiness, and adorned with gospel lights, shining in as great luster in our days as ever they did since the apostles' days. You might have been born in England for many ages and not have found a Christian in it, yea, and since Christianity was here owned, and not have met a Protestant in it. Oh, what an obligation has Providence laid you under by such a merciful performance as this for you. Now, if you say, all this indeed is true, but what is this to eternal salvation? Do not multitudes that enjoy these privileges eternally perish, notwithstanding them? Yea, and perish with an aggravation of sin and misery beyond other sinners? Mr. Flavel says, true, they do so, and it is very sad that it should be so. But yet, we cannot deny this to be a very choice and singular mercy, to be born in such a land and at such a time. For let us consider what helps for salvation men here enjoy, beyond what they could enjoy had their lot fallen according to the forementioned suppositions. Now he continues with things that men enjoy toward helping them toward salvation, but we're actually going to go ahead and stop there for this time, and then Lord willing, continue with that the next reading. But until then, go with a thankful heart for the gracious gifts and mercies the Lord has shown you throughout your life. May He grant that we examine our entire lives looking for these gracious gifts of Providence and how He has preserved us and kept us and offered us, perhaps and hopefully, the gospel, which is even being offered here, and Christ Jesus Himself, the great mediator toward our salvation. And may we go pondering these things again in humility, knowing that we don't deserve them at all. In fact, we deserve, because of our sin, His great eternal wrath. But again, going in humility and thankfulness for these great gifts temporally and spiritually and eternally that He has granted us. And Lord willing, we will talk to you again soon.